Okay, welcome to Movie Dudes episode 182. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And we took a week off. I felt it was called for. We had a very like busy October, well as September. But I mean, October was crazy. Like, you and I were reviewing the entire Halloween series, but then like every week there were like multiple like movies worth going to see in the theaters. We tried to keep up on them too. You know, we did. I think almost every week review a new film in theaters.
Yeah, I think it was pretty close to that.
So, I just felt like one, it was a slow week in terms of releases. Our focus was, at least for me, was more on video games, and it's just I don't know. It felt like the smart thing to do. So now we're back a week later. Sorry about that, and I still have jack shit. I have a little bit here and there that we'll talk about, but Chris held down the fort here, and he actually got to go see a movie I'm interested in, but it's playing nowhere near me, and I actually would prefer not to see it in a theater. That is the new 2018 remake of Suspiria. Break it down for us, Chris.
So, before we do that, like, is there a reason that you just you think you'd rather see it in at home?
I just don't. The main reason is the running time. It's like over two hours.
Long. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, look, we went and saw Mission Impossible in the theater this year. That was 2.5 hours. I just, you know, I look at it. I look at the trailer, and I'm like, I'm not 100% sold on whatever the fuck it's trying to do. It looks like an art house movie, and art house movies probably, you know. They could feel long when they're an hour and a half. So 2.5 hours is just like, I imagine like when I'm at home and I could have a beer or smoke a bowl or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
in it with it a different way. So it's an interesting film in the fact that if you were to watch it at home, it kind of allow, like it's set up in six acts. And it calls out the acts, like
okay,
you will get like title cards for each act, so like it actually like allows you to maybe interact with it in a.
It's like pause, and yeah. We're doing intermission. We're gonna go outside here and have a cigarette or whatever.
Yeah, it might actually work a little bit better because, and I'll get to it in a minute. But I felt trapped.
It's like movie. At a certain length and a certain pace. It's like. I don't know, dude. Would you want to watch like the season of a TV show in a theater? No,
right.
No matter how good it is. So that's why I'm letting myself off the hook here. I know. If I drag my girlfriend to see this, she would absolutely fucking hate it. I just know. I know it, and I'm not convinced I would like it either. So I don't know, let's get into it,
man. So, what is your history with Dario Argento's original?
I've seen it once, and I don't really remember it well. And I have a problem with Italian horror in general. I've tried, and it's not just Argento.
There's a bunch of them.
All of it is just like really cool fever dream shit. And yep. But like none of them feel like they have real plots to them.
Yeah,
or so characters. And,
that's, you know. That's pretty much my problem with Argento and the Italian horror scene like, of like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know how much you've seen of that, but like Shudder is a great resource. Like they have a lot of Italian horror, and I tried.
Yeah, it's weird stuff. It's visually arresting. Like it's always like well shot and like very interesting. But yeah, it's very much like this is like some sort of dream sequence that I'm not sure what the fuck is going on.
I know. And it's like and it's dubbed and I don't like honestly, and I know it's like a thing that everyone says is great about, especially like Suspiria, like the original, like the music is just not for me, dude. Like I hear people talking up the score for the original Suspiria. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go. Like I listened to it today after work and I was just like, no, that's like noise coming out of my speakers. I couldn't.
It's like loud and kind of like, it's a grating sound. So What's interesting about this remake, other than the fact that they made it, is it takes a very different approach to the source material. Where Argento's was filled with like lots of color and kind of like a dreamy overlay. You were never sure what was real and what wasn't real. Luca, and I'm gonna butcher his name here, Guadagnino. He takes a very muted approach to it. So like that interesting factor that Suspiria has, the original has, is instantly gone. But it's also a wholly way more comprehensible film.
Yeah, like almost like an inverse.
Yeah, it's like, so where I don't find this version as visually enticing, it actually tells a story that's it's fairly interesting, and I was kind of that's what held me there. It has a hell of a cast, Dakota Johnson, Tilda Swinton, and Tilda Swinton in two roles actually. She plays a guy as well, actually three roles. She
Yeah, I was
plays
gonna say
like,
I heard three.
yeah, there's a oh, and the other two roles completely unrecognizable.
Okay.
It's Mia Goth is in it. She's pretty good. It's filled with like interesting dance sequences. The music is okay. I think it's good for
Okay.
what the film is. Like, it's not. I don't think it's something that you're gonna want to go listen to by itself, but it
All
works really
right.
well in the movie. But so what the movie is it takes place in Cold War Berlin, 1977 to be exact, I think. Starts out with a girl running to the therapist office. The girl, Patricia, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, and she's in a brief role. She shows up a couple times, but she's not a major player here. She shows up and she kind of like lays down this basically a conspiracy theory of what is going on at this dance troupe. She feels she's being watched and it's some sort of cult and maybe they have like magical powers and she seems unhinged and the doctor very much thinks she's unhinged. And then we're introduced to Dakota Johnson, who plays this American, Susie, who has come to Berlin to audition to be part of this dance troupe. And from there, like things slowly start to unravel. And we see that maybe everything Patricia was setting up is true, to the point where they actually just flat out basically say we're a coven of witches. Not to Susie, not to the other dancers, but the people that are running the studio and running the troupe, like the matrons. So which is where Tilda Swinton comes in. She plays Madame Blanc, who is the lead choreographer, along with all these other kind of like older women that oversee these dancers. And the premise seems to be that these witches, these matrons, are utilizing the strength and power that these young dancers have to sustain their life. And it keeps escalating. Like, I think it's done really well for five. It's a six act thing, and very, very clearly calls out each act with a title card. I think it's very well done up until like the end of Act Five, and then it goes batshit bananas. And this is where some people are gonna be like, "That was fucking amazing." I was like, "This is weird and stupid," and kind of shits all over everything else that was going for it. It was a very like grounded,
But
but
you're totally into
horrific.
it. Up, you're like into it up till then.
Yep, when it goes
Wow.
completely batshit, and I think some of it would be the final act tries to invoke that dream kind of sequence type filming that Argento did so well in the original, where it abandons everything else that Guadagnino was doing to go this opposite realm. And I get it that like the final act is definitely a supernatural aspect and it gets very gory, which I don't have a problem with gore. It's very weird. Like there's a lot of naked dancing going on, lots of like weird rituals going on. And that's all shit that should be right up my alley, but it just did not work. Like, and it kind of turns me on it because I was like, yeah, this is pretty good up until this point. So about 2 hours of the movie, I'm like, yeah, I'm down with this. It's weird. It's going, yeah. But it's going places. And then the place it goes is not where I kind of wanted it to go or how I wanted it to go. And the way the final kind of sequence is done, everything is very blurry. You kind of understand what's happening with all the gore that's happening around everything, but it's all just kind of blurred out. So it's like you've gone this extra step of creating this massively gory and violent final sequence, but then you spoil it by kind of like putting a haze over everything and having twitchy camera and having it unfocused. And and it just does not work for me at all. Which is a shame because I was kind of digging the rest of the film. But
interesting.
Yeah. So, that's Suspiria.
Well, I have, I guess probably three questions. One, like, sure. Do you think, if you watch it again or when you watch it again, like down the road, since you're like prepared for the ending, do you think that maybe your opinion on the movie as a whole, as well as the ending, might change, or do you like dislike it that much that you're just like, no?
I mean, maybe.
Because sometimes if something comes so out of left field and it's kind of nut, like, you know, one of those. I get what you're saying. It's one of those insane endings that are just like, okay, we're going to fucking crazy town.
Right.
And sometimes you're caught so off guard, you're like, no, I was enjoying the movie I was watching.
And
like,
and it's weird because the film is setting you up to go to crazy town, but I was going to a different crazy town, I think.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And what ends up happening is I wasn't on board, but maybe on a rewatch, it would be.
Might grow something on you a little bit.
Yeah. Especially since I really like Dakota Johnson in this. I really like Tilda Swinton. Mm-hmm. I think they both give great performances. I mean, there's some things in it that I think that, you know, you probably could have cut and maybe cut yourself about 20 minutes out of this movie, but whatever. It's an artistic decision. And it does play into the epilogue of it, but I'm not sure that entire side story is necessary. And I don't really want to get into it without spoiling it. So,
okay.
But yeah. So what were your other two questions?
I saw someone assert, and I wonder if you would agree, that the film has a bit to do, like it has a little bit of a messaging around, political interests, let's say, about fascism. Did you see that in the movie or no?
I did not take that away from it, but yeah, no, I did not see that correlation. I have read some things afterwards that, and I don't necessarily agree with them, but some people saying that it's actually a very kind of a sexist film and against women. Like
that's weird.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's a movie that it's
all women. It seems to, yeah, I mean, I think behind the scenes there were not a lot of women working on it, but yeah, I mean,
so the concept of that kind of theorem is that the way this is set up, so you know, it's about this coven of witches that are kind of like eating the strength and power of younger people.
Which, by the way, is like, I feel like that's been done a bunch of times. Like the Neon Demon comes to mind.
Sure. Yeah.
I remember when I reviewed that, I was like, this is like something else, but not as good.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, and I don't think this strays too far from probably the original. It's just more more comprehensible than Argento's work.
I mean, yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I didn't see the fascist side of it. I mean, people are going to take a lot of different things away from this.
The setting is pretty, post World War II and shit. So like, it just feels like it lends itself to something about that. You know?
So it does, and you would think that maybe they would play something off of that, but you could, and that was part of what I was getting at with you could have cut certain things. Is that there is this side story involving this doctor and his lost wife from the war. And I don't think you need that there. Like it's not a necessary piece. They don't really do anything with the fact that it takes place in Berlin. Like you could have cut that. You could have cut the location. You could have placed it anywhere and still told the same story that this film's trying to tell. With very minimal effect on everything.
All right. I mean, I'm interested to see it. It's not like I was trying to shit on the movie at the top.
Sure.
If it does come to my local theater, I will think about going. But like I said, I just feel like there's a better chance of you liking it at home. That's kind of why.
Probably. I do wonder if, like, you know, as I said, I kind of felt trapped. Like, I mean, 2.5 hours is a long, long film. And then you got to remember, like, now, you know, when you're in theaters, that's the runtime of the movie. Actually being in the theater ends up being longer than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Trailers are they're pushing almost a half an hour now. You're probably there a little bit earlier. You're spending over 3 hours in a movie theater. I think being able to pause it maybe after act two or act three and take like a little break, like I think that might have actually helped it a little bit.
Yeah. So, but I will see it eventually. So when I do, I will share my thoughts, but what's your final verdict?
I'm going to give it a 3. I like Dakota Johnson and I think Tilda Swinton's great. Some of the costuming I really enjoyed, especially towards the end. So it's an interesting movie.
Oh, I forgot to ask you my third question.
Yeah.
Which is the person who composed this is Tom York,
who is like Radiohead. Yeah.
Yeah. And I heard that he fucking sings over the score. Like, did you notice that at any point? Like,
no, but maybe. I mean, there's like weird noises and stuff, but I didn't hear like any like distinct lyrics. Like, yeah. It didn't sound like a song.
I feel like I would notice that. Like, that would stick out to me, and I would be like, "No, what are you doing?" I always try to pay attention to like the score in movies. Like, I don't know, it's one of the, like the highlights for me. But I'd be like, I would be upset.
I thought the soundtrack worked for what this movie was, but like it did not like. There is nothing about it that sticks out to me, which is, and like I can get attached to certain themes and stuff, which when we talk about Housewife later, I'll definitely discuss. But nothing here is like, yeah, this is something that like really stuck out at me, like, good or bad. Like it just seemed like it fit. It was a good fit, but nothing like outstanding one way or the other.
Before we move on, just because we're talking about scores or whatever, have you like listened to Halloween 2018 score at all since you've seen the movie?
No. I think it's I listened to a little bit editing the show, I did pull I pulled a little bit from the new theme.
Yeah.
I have not listened to the entire score.
Oh, that's good. If I remember, I'll like shoot you like one of the tracks I think is like really cool. But like, there's a few that like sound different and new, you know.
Right.
Anyways, like I said, I have not seen a ton. I've been playing a lot of video games and actually watching TV.
Yeah, so what have you been watching on TV? Catch us up.
All sorts of shit, but two kind of like new and more relevant, I guess, things is on Netflix. I had already mentioned that I started what is it, the Haunting of Hill House, I think it's
Yes.
called. I think I had only seen the first episode though when I mentioned it, you know, this is a couple weeks back. And I wasn't entirely sold on it. I'm only like four episodes into that now, but I will say that like I'm into it now. But
Okay.
like we're just like kind of savoring it because like each episode feels so complete and it's they're like long, like some of them are over an hour. That's just kind of like I'm enjoying not binging it, to be honest. Like I'll
Okay.
watch an episode of it and then just turn on something else, you know. But yeah, I'm definitely like into it now. Like Chris, you have not checked this show out yet?
No, it is in my queue. Another thing I
You're
need to
I
get to.
mean, I can almost guarantee you're gonna dig it because
Okay.
I mean, you like Michael Flanagan's work, so do I. But it has like that same kind of look and feel that his movies have, almost like
Okay.
very clean, almost distinct look that he has to his movies. And you know, it just has the same feel. Like he has some of the same actors and stuff that he works with before. And it's just like some of the stuff. Like the last thing he did was the hell is that movie we liked? Gerald's Game from
Gerald's
last
Game,
year.
yeah. And he did Hush too, right?
Yeah, he did Hush as well. But like Gerald's Game, you know, he did like he just felt like one of those right fits for adapting Stephen King.
Yeah.
Kind of like the way Frank Darabont was back in like the you know late 90s. Like
Yep.
that's it just feels like Mike Flanagan gets Stephen King. And this is not Stephen King, but this totally feels like a fucking Stephen King like novel being adapted. So
Oh,
I will
nice. Well,
guarantee you're gonna dig it. Like
that makes me interested.
I think I said it when we first talked about it. It reminded me of It. It like reminds me of It a lot.
Okay.
Because it's this whole, you know, switching between the present and the prior evil when they were kids, and so like you and the way it's gone so far, like through the first four episodes, is just going through this whole family, and you kind of follow one character in the family in the present, like present day. You kind of follow them throughout a day, right? But then
Okay.
they keep having flashbacks to when they were kids, and you kind of learn. Each like so you're kind of like piecing the backstory of what happened in the past through each episode as you learn each new character, kind of right.
Okay,
And I'm
that's
sure
an
it's gonna kind of
interesting
yeah, I'm sure it's
take.
gonna kind of come together and hopefully get really awesome. But
Nice.
yeah, I'm really digging it so far. Yeah, just for whatever reason, I like the first episode, I was just like, eh. But now I'm like, yeah, I really like it. We're just taking our time with it, so I will check back. Like once I'm done with that and you know kind of give like a more of a final verdict on it, but I'm excited to like go through it and take my time. I also, just so you know, going in, Chris, I guess there's ghosts all over in the background, and I knew about that going in, but I still have not spotted them. So
Okay.
but like I guess a lot, and like every episode there's ghosts in the background, so it's like something fun to do while you're watching it.
Can't count the ghosts.
I did watch one other thing, but I don't want to talk too long at once. So like let's actually talk about this film Housewife that you watched.
Yeah. Did you see Baskin? A Turkish horror
No.
film. Okay.
I remember you talking about it,
Yeah.
but no.
So Baskin, 2015 film. I think I watched it last year and talked about it on here.
Yeah.
Extreme kind of extreme fantasy horror, like a very trippy, very gory, very weird,
So
extremely violent.
are we talking Mandy here?
Yeah, but not in
Kinda.
like probably even more so than Mandy,
Okay.
and not in the same way either. Like, you know, where Nick Cage kind of goes off and he plays like a goof that's going on like a killing spree, but he's kind of being Nick Cage at the same time.
Yeah.
Baskin is way darker, like more serious dark. Not, you know, I mean, they do kill Nick Cage's wife in Mandy. So
yeah.
So Housewife is the next film from this guy Ken Evernall, who did Baskin. And it's funny that I saw it the day after I saw Suspiria, because where Suspiria, the original, was very dreamlike and you know, you couldn't tell what was reality and what wasn't a lot in the original Argento film. And then this new one is way more grounded. Housewife is complete fucking weirdness. It starts off with these two sisters playing, and the older one, she kind of reaches down and discovers that she's having her period. So, like, you know, there's blood. They're a little confused. They call for their mom, who comes in, and she starts kind of talking gibberish, like, about how this is all wrong, and she takes the girl away, and leaves the younger one alone in the bedroom. And so, like, after a little bit, the younger one starts going to look for her, and she hears them in the bathroom, and she walks in on the mother drowning the older daughter in the toilet, like very graphically. And then it becomes like a chase throughout the house, like where she's chasing the other daughter. And so it's very obvious the mother has some sort of, she's had some sort of psychotic break. She believes there's people coming to get her. There's visitors. And it's never really relayed what that means, but ultimately the little girl escapes, and it flashes forward to she's now married. But she has a hard time with life. And I mean, I suppose you would if you watched your sister get murdered, and there was also her dad was also murdered in that sequence. She's afraid of toilets, like she pees in the tub or in the sink. And she just has like a hard time dealing with, you know, human relation in a way. She seems very detached from her husband and from her friends. And she ends up going to this, I'm going to call him a seer, but, a medium of sorts. Like, you know, you go to one of those events
a seance
type thing? Something like that, but like a big, like kind of a convention type thing, like where you've probably seen it on TV, like, oh, he reaches out and he talks like, I can tell you about your dead, you know, whatever. Yeah. So it's kind of like that, but this guy like touches you, and he basically goes into your psyche and into your dreams. Like, he's a dream master of sorts. And so he does this, and weird things start to happen. And then weirder things start to happen. And like reality starts to bend. You're not sure if she's going crazy, or if she's locked in a dream, or, if you're going crazy watching it. And it ends on some total fucking lunacy. We're talking like Lovecraftian cosmic horror shit going on. It's a weird fucking movie. I kind of dug it. I kind of found it fun. Like, it is gory, but not to the extent that Baskin is. But it also plays more like with this story and her dealing with her problems, and then ultimately where it ends up, and, you know, her fear and her guilt over her sister's death and her fear of her mother, they all play into the ending, which is really fucking weird. And then there's like tentacle monsters. So
yeah. I am looking at the IMDb page for it right now. It has an awesome poster with
tentacles
and
kind of look out me to watch it.
Yeah.
I would recommend watching the trailer to see if if maybe it's something that you're into, but I kind of dug it. yeah, there's some issues. I mean, the acting is not the best, but I think the story is strong enough that it pulls through the trippiness of the dream sequences or reality sequences or whatever the fuck is going on are done well enough that I was kind of brought in, and I really, really dug the like end theme, which played over the credits. Just like this kind of synth of the like the main theme, like they do like kind of this synth, they call it, it's like the disco mix or whatever, but I think it's an awesome version of that. Like I don't know, it has its issues, but I mostly enjoyed it. So
you are like I don't know, you must be like a fan of this director, because like I've heard of Baskin, but I think I heard of it from you. So it's like,
yeah. It's well, so what came up with Baskin was it showed up on like one of those lists of like, yeah, you know, it's a, you know, the same list that,
you know, best horror movies of the year type things.
Yeah. But not like most, like, most controversial horror movies.
Oh,
like, one of those lists. Yeah. Like, so I was like, all right. Like it showed up on Netflix. I was like, I'll watch it. And it was fucking weird. And then this kind of showed up. I think the poster, like you said, I think the poster's fucking amazing. Like really cool looking. It kind of plays into some of the things I like. Like I enjoy Lovecraftian horror. I enjoy like dreams, like as long as like you can kind of make out what's going on and it doesn't just become this surreal like abandoning of story. So yeah, like this plays up, like there's cults, like it maybe plays a little bit too much with things, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. And it's quick. It's an hour and 22 minutes. Like it is a fast watch.
What did you watch this on? Did you rent it?
I rented it. Yeah, I think I rented it on. Actually, I rented it on Xbox Video because
get credits.
There were credits involved. So,
all right. Well, I actually will probably go back to first to see if Baskin's on Netflix still, because I remember it was on there forever.
Yeah, that's a weird film, and it may be all in Turkish too. Like that may be. This is, I mean, there are parts where they speak in another language, but
yeah,
for the most part, this is in English. So,
okay. Well, I mean, either way, I don't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not that
I watch all sorts of foreign horror movies.
Not that subtitles scare
you
off.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's nice to have it in your native language. Yeah.
So well, I'm gonna give it a 3.
All right,
but I liked it.
I might give this director a chance. And honestly, dude, that poster is like, I would hang that shit on my wall. It's fucking awesome.
I love the colors. Like, it's like that
dark,
dude. It's like a dark blue into a teal and then like the red all around it.
And I don't know. It just looks like something that, like, from the 80s or something, like when they used to give a fuck about poster art. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's cool. Anyways, the only other thing I will bore you with is I've started season 2 of Making a Murderer.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly cannot remember, Chris, if you watched season 1 or not.
I have not seen it yet. Everybody has told me that it is an amazing kind of like documentary TV show.
Okay.
But no, I have not seen it. I do kind of know the premise, though.
You got the idea. You don't mind me going over that a little bit, because...
No. I mean, I read some articles on,
like, you know, things. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is still an ongoing thing, right? Like, it's not.
Yeah, sure.
I
mean, they're both in prison for life. Well, and
there's like appeals or something, or still investigations going on.
And again, like, I remember hearing things in the news, right? But I didn't look it up after I started watching season 2 because, like, I don't want to take away any sort of what I don't, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't want to spoil it. Yeah, I mean, I know I can easily spoil it, but it's just like, you know, whatever I don't know, I want it to be a surprise, I guess, put it that way, right?
Yes.
But I mean, there was no way that season two of Making a Murder was going to be what season one was. I mean, for one, season one was like made over the course of 10 years. In my opinion, like a groundbreaking piece of like documentary filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of like how Michael Moore is never going to top Roger and Me. It's just like you can't top being a classic or being, you know, being like, and like the original story of season one was so compelling and such a surprise, and these filmmakers were just there to catch it happen, like as it unfolded. You got like this crazy, insane story, and which leads into a trial in season one. So like halfway through season one, it kind of just turns into this courtroom drama where you're already invested in everything that's happening, and then you get to watch it play out. Almost like, you know, back in 94 when we were watching the OJ like thing unfold, right? Right? Like, but like, you know, through some master filmmaking, like it was like, you know, like you end an episode on this crazy cliffhanger where your jaw just drops to the fucking floor. You're like, I can't wait to see what happens next. Like, I could tell you everything here, Chris. I mean, if, when you're watching it, you would still be like, yeah, they did a great job making this. And you'd still probably be really involved in it. But like, yeah, just like the basic story behind this whole series, like the true story is insane. This guy in Wisconsin, he got put in jail for like 15 years for rape. That turns out he didn't commit. Like, he's exonerated due to like DNA evidence or some bullshit. I forgot how he got off. But he like 100% did not do it, right?
Okay.
And he gets out. And like what I'm describing to you is probably the first two episodes of season one. He gets out of prison, goes back to his like shithole like trailer park or wherever the fuck he lives at in Wisconsin. And then the state like owes him like millions of dollars for what they've done to him, right?
Right.
Like, he is on the verge of the state paying him millions of dollars. Like, he's gonna be rich, he's gonna have it made. And all of a sudden, a dead body shows up. Like he's just like straight out of prison, and this girl is like murdered and on his property, and he's convicted of being of murdering her. And you know, it's basically like the documentary, like season one, kind of like its argument is that like the state had a vendetta against him, and they framed him.
Okay.
Right. And you know, you could say it's one-sided. Yes, it is. It is a persuasive argument. But as a persuasive argument, it's very powerful. And I'm just of the opinion that I don't think documentaries have to be, you know, even-handed and
they don't.
You know, they could, you could make a statement. Like, so anyway, you know, I got into an argument with like our friend Brian about this on Twitter. He's like, "They make shit up." I'm like, you know, people say the same thing about Michael Moore. Like he's coming at it from his perspective. Yes, you know, he's not going to make the argument of, you know, like in the instance of Making a Murderer, they're not going to make the prosecution's argument for them. You know what I mean?
Right, right. And it's so also like, oh, like,
they left things out. Yeah, they did.
Of course they did, because they believe like X, Y, and Z, so they want to. They're pushing that theory. Now, like, as somebody that's consuming that media, like, we should then look and go,
be skeptical. Look things up.
Like, hey, maybe they're not telling. Like, so this is very interesting. Let's see what the other side of the proof says.
Yeah,
and come to your own conclusions.
You know, I judge a documentary the same I would as a film. Like, how does it move me? Like, you know, how good is it as a work of art? That's kind of how I judge documentaries, and I don't expect them, you know, that's on me. I could, you know, I have the internet. I could go on Wikipedia. I could research. I could figure out things on my own. I don't like to be actively deceived, but, you know, that's also in the eye of the beholder in many ways. Like, I don't feel like Michael Moore deceives me. But anyways, back to Making a Murder, and to the point I'm trying to make is it would have never, you wouldn't be able to top that. Like, it's just such a crazy, awesome idea for, or whatever, like, chance, you know, happenstance, you know, luck. Season two what they try to do is follow like what's happened since season one aired, essentially. And, you know, they include the criticisms that people made of season one, like, oh, you guys didn't include this, you didn't include that. And what season two is basically is it follows a lawyer who is trying to get this guy out. But then also it follows like this advocate slash lawyer who she is trying to get his nephew out, who also gets convicted of like being there and being part of her murder in season right. one.
Yep.
And this kid, he was, I mean, developmentally challenged, right? Like mm-hmm. and his confession was coerced, and that's all the only evidence they have against him. And you know, you get to see the raw footage of their like their interrogation of this kid. And as you're watching it, like any like I'm not an expert, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a cop. I look at that though, and I'm like, yeah, that should not be admissible evidence. Like they basically fed stuff to this kid who is on the verge of being like retarded, and he repeated it back to them, and they're like, that's his confession. And it's just like, no.
Yeah, like, no, shit shouldn't work that way.
Yeah, and, you know, and so many things about it are sketchy. Like, dude, he was a minor to begin with. He didn't have a lawyer present. His mom was not there. Like, I don't know.
So, weird thing about that, and I only know this because I just listened to the latest episode of Serial.
Don't spoil if it's a spoiler, don't tell me. Like, if it's like, if he's out of prison now, I don't want to know.
Who?
The kid, the nephew. I don't want
to know. No, not just legal wise for minors.
Yes.
They don't have to bring your parent in, and they can question you without your parent and without a lawyer. It's weird that they can do that, but they can.
They're kind of going into that now in the episode. Like the episode I'm on right now, I think I'm on episode 6. They kind of are going into like this advocate is going to appeals court to fight to keep this federal judge who overturned the kid's conviction, and the state's trying to fight back, saying no, you know, and they're getting into like, you know, whether they were talking about that. I forgot what they said exactly, but yeah, like essentially, yeah. I mean, I guess maybe, even if it is like, if I'm a cop, I would prefer not to do it that way so that my case is stronger. I don't know. It's just because it's whether it's legal or not, it's still, I think, ethically can be seen as sketchy, in my opinion. I don't know.
Right. Well, fully agree. Just
yeah, that's interesting though.
It is weird that they're allowed to do that.
I was under the impression that, you know, those were laws.
Yeah, I always thought that you need like you can't question a minor. You need to have a parent or somebody there. But
oh yeah, the discussion they get to in the episode I was just thinking about. It was like, you know, like when you're questioning a minor, you have to be especially like the Supreme Court ruled they have to take special care. And how you question them and this and that. But, you know, you can kind of run roughshod over things like that, right? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
What's special care? You know what I mean? So, but anyways, yeah, like,
yep.
I'm finding myself really enjoying season two of Making a Murderer, but I think it's more so realizing just how invested I am in these quote-unquote characters from season one. Like, uh-huh. These real people. Like, I'm like, you come back to that story and I still find it to be such an outrageous injustice and just so like, I just don't buy that this guy would fucking rape and murder some lady after spending 15 years in prison and like a week before he's going to be a millionaire. It just like doesn't compute for me. Right. Like, and maybe he did. Maybe he did do it.
Right. Maybe he is that dude, but that seems really weird. Like that, mm-hmm. that alone should be enough to like,
and so, and you know, there's so many things that seem so sketchy that the cops and the prosecution did, and whether you think he did it or not, I think most people who watch that show come away saying his nephew got caught up in some bad shit that he had nothing to do with. Like, the kid is clearly not like all there, And he's going to, like, he's in jail for life right now. He's been in jail for over 10 years or whatever. And it's just like, it ain't right. Like, you don't have, in my opinion, like, his confession is not evidence enough that he should be there. So, like, that alone, I'm watching season two, like, man, I hope he fucking gets out. Because I remember hearing on the news he was going to get out. But then I remember hearing, oh, the state's appealing it. And that's exactly what's happening on the show. But I never found out what happened after that. So I'm, like, totally, you know, captivated by that story. But again, it's just like, it's if you love season one or you're into true crime documentary genre, you know, like if that's like your deal, like you right. love that shit, of course you're gonna eat this up. It's just no way it's gonna be ever near as close to season one. But I'll let you know what I think when I'm all done with it. If you ever did watch season one, I'm telling you, it's just crazy good TV.
Nice.
Season two, still compelling. But that's kind of it for me. I know you had Hotel Artemis, too, if you wanted to talk about
that. Yeah, it's real brief. I'm not going to spend too long on it. But Hotel Artemis. So you've seen John Wick, right?
Yes.
You know the hotel that he kind of stops in?
Yes.
It's like a, you know, there's rules, like not allowed to kill anybody while you're on the grounds or whatever. Hotel Artemis almost seems like it takes that concept, except
let's do it about that hotel.
Yeah, well, it seems that way. Like it's not, doesn't tie into John Wick, but that's like the easiest way to understand what this hotel is. It's a location for criminals to go and kind of chill out, except it's actually a hospital. So that's
get bullets taken out. Yeah.
Yeah. So like Jodie Foster plays the nurse. And she runs the Artemis, which is basically a membership only criminal hospital, like where you go, like if you know you have to be taken care of, but you can't go to a regular hospital. This movie has a hell of a cast: Jodie Foster, Sterling K. Brown, who was recently in Predators. He was also in Black Panther, but most people probably know him from NBC show This Is Us. He's
like a multiple Emmy Award winning actor. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like him.
He's great. Like I've never seen him in anything except Predator, but he's fucking hilarious in that shit.
Dude. You know, he has a great, like, I've only seen him like a couple times in This Is Us. I don't watch it. My wife does, but he just has a great presence. Like he's able to kind of pull into that. I want to see this guy in more shit.
Yeah. And crazy too, because like I know, and like this is like he's like this normal nerdy guy, and then you see him in the Predator, and he's like,
yeah,
fuck this, sarcastic fuck that.
Dude, yeah,
yeah, like,
Sophia Boutella, probably best known as the Mummy in that Tom Cruise one. She's probably been in some other shit, but that's what I know her from.
Yeah,
Jeff Goldblum, Zachary Quinto. Charlie Day, Dave Bautista, like this is a fucking cast. Like,
yeah, it's a cast for sure, man. It's a fucking ensemble for you.
I mean, this is a boring ass movie.
Okay, well, it's 94 minutes, so
it's really quick.
Doesn't always say it's welcome, but
it takes like still. It takes 20-25 minutes to even kind of get going, and then there's like another half an hour actually in the hotel. And then it does end with a couple good action scenes. There's a cool hallway fight scene between Sophia Boutella and like a group of gang members. But it's like you've seen these fights before, right? Like you've seen the hallway fight scene. Like it's been done better in Daredevil.
And absolutely.
Like you've kind of seen like these things happen. Like everything in it is just kind of like, it's there. You've seen all of this shit before. I just wish there was more to it. Like I wish like the idea of like this hospital for criminals is pretty cool. But they really just don't do anything with it. They build up Jeff Goldblum as like this. He's like the, the Wolfman or something. I don't know what the fuck he is. He's like in charge of all the crime in the city. But he's only in it for like 5 minutes, and most of it he's like doped up. It's just,
Is Charlie Day playing Charlie Day?
yeah, as
Yeah,
always,
yeah.
right? Like,
I think there was one movie he was in, I can't remember, where he's like a tech support guy, where he's like completely normal. Like he's one of the guys in the situation room or whatever, like
right.
and he, but like, you know, there was no nothing to him other like he was just like a normal guy. But yeah, otherwise every time I've seen him, he's just like fucking he's Charlie Day, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's a goofy criminal here,
Okay.
who's kind of like, he's a bit sexist and has some issues with some of the other people at the hospital. I really wish that this just it was better, because like everything about it was pretty cool. Like all the concepts behind it were pretty cool. I like everybody that's in it. It's just, I was like, this is boring. The only thing going for it is that it is only 90 minutes long, so
But still somehow boring. I don't like
yeah. So it's like I mean, much like Housewife, I was kind of like, I put this on right after Housewife, actually, and I was kind of doing work at the same time. But with Housewife, I kept looking over, and like I was kind of enraptured by what was going on the screen. In this, I would like zone out from it for moments at a time.
Oh, I
Like,
mean, I definitely have watched some movies like that over the last week. That's why I didn't even bring them up, because I was so not paying attention that I was like, I can't speak to them. Like,
it's like, to me, like I think a good movie,
would pull you away,
yeah,
yeah, you know.
can pull you in, and like, yeah, I'm like looking over, and like everything looks fine. It's just nothing is engaging enough to keep me there. So,
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with a 2 for it. Maybe you get more mileage out of it than I will, but I did not like it.
All right. The movies I was thinking of that I watched like that was one was Ocean's 8. Like I just wasn't paying attention. That one I would say I was, because I was playing Dark Souls while I was watching that. I just wasn't paying attention enough, so I can't say. I mean, certainly I could tell, like you said, if it was like amazing, I would have been like,
Right,
"Holy
right.
shit!" It was not amazing, not even close. Like maybe a 3 stars. Another one last night, same thing. I'm playing Dark Souls. I watched Paddington 2. And, you know, that seemed like a really good kids movie. But again, I just didn't watch it close enough that I could really say. But it did seem really good. Parts of it visually, like, looked like it was like they were. It was a Wes Anderson movie. Like such attention to detail and symmetry and all that, and just, you know, the cutesiness of it and everything. Like, it's. Have you seen that one yet?
No.
It's pretty good. And like a lot of good kid movies, it's a prison break film. So it was okay, but again, like I didn't watch it close enough to be like
Right.
you must see this. But yeah, that's basically it. But for next week, I will have like new stuff for sure, Chris. I'm going to see Overlord tomorrow night.
Me too.
Yeah,
Well,
I'm excited.
tomorrow afternoon. But yeah, I was like, I need to go see this. Like, this looks right up my alley.
I just look at the font for it and I'm like, this
It's
is
great.
fucking, this is Wolfenstein. Like the font of Overlord looks like Wolfenstein. The premise is Wolfenstein. I'm like, this is Wolfenstein. Like
And you
I
know what?
can't wait. I
I
need
need to
that.
see people
I need
killing Nazis.
really badly.
It's like,
I was gonna actually tweet that like earlier, like an hour before the show. I was like, I just somehow forgot, but I was like, you know what, dude? It's gonna be a good time no matter what, because fucking Nazis are gonna be getting killed in it. So yeah, I'm gonna see that tomorrow night. I can't wait. Actually, like, I have like, it's like this. I'm not trying to like overhype myself for it, but I secretly hope it's like one of my favorite movies of the year.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
And on Saturday, to bring myself down from that, I'm getting dragged to the goddamn Grinch at 2:45 p.m. So
you enjoy that one.
Yeah. You got kids and you're avoiding that bullet.
God, no interest in seeing that at all. The Grinch is a 22-minute cartoon from the 60s. And that's how that should be enjoyed.
That was the peak of the Grinch. Yeah, I agree with you, and I said the same thing. But I will let you know how a hour and 40-minute version of that is.
All right.
Or however long it is.
I mean, for your sake, I hope it actually turns out good.
I don't.
And I may see the girl in the spider's web as well.
Okay.
If I get a chance.
All right. So yeah, we're gonna have stuff.
Yep.
At the very least, we'll have both seen Overlord. I might actually check out that Orson Welles shit that's going on Netflix. More so than the movie itself. Like, I don't know if you saw some unfinished Orson Welles film was put on.
No,
Netflix.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
His last film, I think it's called The Other Side of the Wind. But yeah, if you look on Netflix's new releases, you'll also see like an hour and a half documentary about the making of that, which looks more interesting to me than the movie itself. So I'm like, how the hell did they finish this or whatever,
Yeah, well, that actually could be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and the movie itself could be all right. It looks like you know, some, I don't know when he died, but I had to guess this was like late 70s or something, and it looks like he was trying to do some sort of experimental film that. So not only did he not finish it, but it was experimental to begin with. So I'm imagining the actual film itself might not be great, but I don't know. I might check it out. It feels like one of those things where it's like, I don't know, that's cool that you guys unearthed that. Like, let's check this out, I guess. But yeah, so we're going to have a lot of stuff new for next week.
All right.
Yep.
Movie dudes.
Do, 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 do.